Good morning. It's good to be with you. So for the past several weeks, we've been in a sermon series called Spiritual Practices, Ancient Paths to Freedom and Joy. So each sermon in this series is highlighting one simple spiritual practice that's designed to enhance our experience of life and our connection with God. And even though we love to innovate, we're not being innovative here. We're selecting from spiritual practices that have truly stood the test of time. So there's just oodles and oodles of data on how many people from very diverse backgrounds have found these to be helpful throughout the centuries. And it's kind of funny because thinking about this type of spiritual practice actually reminds me of all things of my connections to the self-help industry in a former time in my life. So in my teens and early 20s, I was really into self-help stuff. I've always been sort of preoccupied with high achievements and performance, and so I think self-help materials held this allure for me. They have these potent-sounding promises of making me more efficient and smarter and more effective. And so there was this one self-help course that I got really into right after college. It was a set of tapes, remember cassette tapes, that a friend gave to me, and it was one of the big, well-known self-help gurus. Now, I've probably forgotten most of what was on those tapes, but I do remember one part very clearly. In one of the tapes, the speaker was emphasizing very distinctly and with much conviction that it is possible, if one is focused and disciplined enough, to completely eliminate negative emotions from your life. So at that time in my life, I was feeling pretty stuck. I had run into some roadblocks on my life plan of a continuous string of ever greater achievements, and I was in a season of a lot of emotional turmoil. And that had me pretty overwhelmed. I was feeling more and more depressed about my life, and so this promise of a life free of negative emotions sounded pretty good. And I was like, sign me up. And on that note, I would like to show you a little movie clip. This is a scene from the movie Inside Out. It's the Pixar movie from this summer that is now up for 2 Oscars. So most of this movie takes place inside the mind of an 11-year-old girl named Riley. The main characters are Riley's emotions. And in this clip, we see them trying to cope with Riley's first day in a new city and a new school.
Hello, did I wake you?
You have to play that.
Well, I have to practice, and I don't think of it as playing so much as hugging. Okay, first day of school, very, very exciting. I was up late last night figuring out a new plan. Here it is. Fear. I need a list of all the possible negative outcomes on the first day at a new school.
Way ahead of you there. Does anyone know how to spell meteor?
Disgust. Make sure Riley stands out today, but also blends in.
When I'm through, Riley will look so good, the other kids will look at their own outfits and barf.
Joy. Yes, Joy? You'll be in charge of the console, keeping Riley happy all day long. And may I add, I love your dress. It's adorable. Oh, this old thing? Thank you so much. I love the way it twirls.
Train of thought. Right on schedule.
Anger. Unload the daydreams. I ordered extra in case things get slow in class.
Might come in handy if this new school is full of boring, useless classes, which it probably will be.
Oh, sadness. I have a super important job just for you.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Follow me.
What are you doing?
And there. Perfect. This is the circle of sadness. Your job is to make sure that all the sadness stays inside of it.
So, you want me to just stand here?
Hey, it's not my place to tell you how to do your job. Just make sure that all the sadness stays in the circle.
See? You're a pro at this.
Isn't this fun?
No.
Atta girl. All right, everyone, fresh start. We are going to have a good day, which will turn into a good week, which will turn into a good year, which turns into a good life.
So without spoiling the movie, let's just say that Joy's strategy of quarantining sadness doesn't go so well. And you're probably picking up on the fact that today's spiritual practice is going to advocate a different direction than my old self-help tapes. And that's even aside from the fact that spiritual practices are fundamentally different than self-help techniques. And I'm not hating on self-help, because I still use some of those tidbits here and there. But self-help in general is all about what you can do, how you can do it better, more effectively, more efficiently. And that's all fine and good. But spiritual practices are all about what God can do. They're just different ways that we make room for God to do something in our lives. So on that note, let's talk about today's spiritual practice. It's a self-reflection and prayer exercise called the examen. Examen being Spanish for exam, if I'm not mistaken. So I first found out about the examen a bunch of years ago in this church, and I made several attempts to practice it, but I wasn't very consistent, and it kind of just fizzled. But recently, the examen has come back on my radar in a very surprising and powerful way. Here's how that happened. So I was finding myself exploring two seemingly very different angles on life. Each of these journeys was taking place in a completely different context with a different vocabulary. So I was maybe a little caught off guard when I started to discover that these two journeys were actually the same journey, or at least very related. One journey is discovering and moving towards emotional health. The other is discovering God in every moment of every day, what you might call mystical connection with God. So on the side of this mystical connection stuff, I found myself really struck by this little quote from a guy named Richard Rohr. He's a contemplative Franciscan mystic. And he says, God comes to us disguised as our life. Or there's a very similar line from another contemplative monk named James Finley, who says, the greatest teacher of God's presence in our life is our life. So for me, these lines seem to be transcending my normal rational mode of thinking in a way that was both mesmerizing and challenging. The idea seems to be that God is thoroughly present in my life, in my everyday, moment-to-moment experience. He's right there within reach, but also somehow just beneath the surface, like hidden in the pattern or something. And I realized that I had seen this same sort of idea come up in various spots in the New Testament. So, for instance, there's this one story where Paul, who's this early follower of Jesus and a faith entrepreneur, he wrote about a third of the New Testament. He's in the Greek city of Athens, and he's speaking to a bunch of smarty-pants intellectuals. And he refers to God saying, for in him we live and move and have our being. And elsewhere, Paul talks about Jesus in a similar way, saying, the church is made full and complete by Christ, who fills all things everywhere with himself. So I find this to be so fascinating, this idea that God is right there, everywhere, all the time, in all things, somehow hidden in the seemingly ordinary moments of my day. And this has given me a new way of thinking about how God might be speaking to me. It makes me wonder if God is potentially speaking through all my experiences. And shucks, if that's the case, then I'm probably missing most of it. 99% is just flying right by. So I started to wonder how I could tune into how God is present to me throughout the day. And then I remembered the examen, and I wondered if it might be the perfect tool for this. So I started trying to do it, only to discover not only was it tapping into this mystical journey that I was on, but it was also playing into, quite significantly, my journey towards emotional health. And the examen began to unify these two worlds for me and create a powerful synergy between them. And this is what I'm so excited to share with you today. So first, some background. The examen was developed by this Spanish guy, Ignatius of Loyola. Ignatius has quite an incredible story, and he was the founder of this order of Catholic priests called the Jesuits back in the 1500s. Ignatius actually started out as a swashbuckling, fight-picking youth with aspirations of a glorious military career. But then, in his very first battle command, he sustained a cannonball wound to the leg. And while he was convalescing, he had some kind of profound spiritual awakening that ignited a lifelong devotion to Jesus. Once he was on his feet again, he began to engage in rather intense prayer and self-reflection, going off to a cave and praying 7 hours a day. He then set out on a spiritual pilgrimage of walking barefoot 2,000 miles from Spain to Jerusalem, which he did successfully. So Ignatius, not exactly a lightweight, spiritually speaking. It didn't work out for him in Jerusalem, and from there it took him about 15 years to figure out what he was about, to gather a group of passionate, like-minded individuals, and officially start the Jesuit order, which had the broad mission of, quote, helping souls. Now here's the really incredible part. In just 15 years, this scrappy ragtag band of soul helpers grew from 10 guys to about 1,000. Now think about that for a second. We're not talking about 1,000 Facebook likes or even 1,000 Facebook friends. We're talking about 1,000 men who dedicated their lives to being Jesuits. To become a Jesuit involves taking 3 vows: a vow of poverty, a vow of chastity, and a vow of obedience, meaning you do whatever your superior tells you to do. How do you get 1,000 people to sign up for that program? This is just one of those things that you hear about and you wonder, what in the world was going on? I mean, what kind of marketing campaign were they running? And speaking of which, how do you market at all with 16th century technology? Well, it seems like what was so powerfully attractive about this organization all traces back to Ignatius and his ability to spiritually mentor people. He served as a close spiritual mentor to each one of those original 10 guys. And he had this rare spiritual genius where he was able to help them come to know themselves and to know God in a deep and lasting way. Along the way, he developed a program which he called the Spiritual Exercises, which helped and still helps many, many people be spiritually mentored in the same way. Ignatius was so good at this stuff that he was eventually declared the patron saint of spiritual retreats. So why do I tell you this? Well, Ignatius's spiritual exercises are typically experienced as a 30-day retreat, which I'm guessing is not accessible to most of us. However, the examen is one tiny part of those exercises, and it's a short daily prayer that seems to somehow distill the power of the exercises. The tools of the examen are the same that led Ignatius through that spiritual journey from the rabble-rousing, violence-prone youth to the incredible spiritual leader who started and led this heroic and influential organization. One other quick story about Ignatius and the examen. The Jesuits were like busy little bees out doing all sorts of innovative and courageous things. At one point, some of the Jesuit leaders came to Ignatius at a Jesuit conference and said that they were finding themselves so busy with their task of heroically helping souls that they didn't have time for all the prayers they were supposed to be praying. Ignatius told them that they could jettison any prayer exercise except the examen, which was, quote, the most important prayer, according to him. Okay, so certainly I've hyped it up enough, so let's talk about what the examen is and how to do it. And actually, the full examen has 5 steps, but today I'm going to focus on 3 of them and on 1 especially. There's actually many different versions of the examen and many different ways in which it can be used. So here is my take on 1 popular modern version, and this is in your program with some blanks to fill in if you like. Step 1, invite God's presence. Step 2, mine your day for gratitude. Step 3, make room for the emotions of your day. Step 4, choose 1 feature of the day and pray from it. And step 5, look toward tomorrow with hope. So it's these first 3 steps, and especially the 3rd step, that I want to focus on today. Step 1 is, again, to invite God's presence. Okay, even though this step mentions God explicitly, I don't think it needs to exclude those who aren't sure if they believe in God. At least I hope not. This can be God as you understand God, or it can be something like that in the universe which embodies love. What's most important here is creating a space of unconditional and utterly non-judgmental love. For many, God embodies this kind of love. But for others, it's very hard to envision God as fully loving and non-judgmental. So whether it's Jesus or God or the pure distilled love of the universe, what's important to remember is this love, which I'll just call God from here on out, loves you totally and unconditionally. This God is not mad at you or even mildly disappointed in you. This God is wholeheartedly on your side, your absolute biggest fan, an exuberant cheerleader in your corner, and just gushily excited to spend some time with you. So I'm kind of harping on this point, but we'll see why it's important a bit later on. Next step is to mine your day for gratitude. So I try to go back to the start of my day and step through each chunk of time and find as many things as I can to be grateful for and give thanks for those things. This is like one of those rapid-fire creative brainstorming sessions where quantity is the goal. I'm trying to find any little thing, or certainly any big thing, that I can be grateful for. Any green light on my commute, any positive interaction, any email I was able to click send on, any post online that made me smile, anything that I can be grateful for. If you try it, I think you'll like this step a lot, especially as you practice it more. I find that gratitude is like a muscle, and the more I do it, the more I can do it. And as I do it more, I'm able to find more and more things to be grateful for in my day. Okay, so now we're set up really well for this third step, which is what I'm focusing on today. Make room for the emotions of your day. I mentioned earlier that the examen came into my life as this unexpected and powerful bridge between the worlds of mystical connection with God and emotional health. So you can see this is where the emotional piece ties in. The examen has been such a gift to me in this regard. Incorporating the examen into my day has become a very important part of what I call my emotional hygiene. So let me try and define this phrase a little bit. Just like we have daily habits that support our physical health, I found that I'm so well served to have small daily routines to support my emotional health. So similar to the way that I brush my teeth and shower on a regular basis, giving that same sort of brief, consistent attention to how I'm feeling so that things don't get gunked up and crusty, emotionally speaking. So in the clip we saw from Inside Out, I think we were seeing an example of poor emotional hygiene. Because good emotional hygiene is not about filtering out unpleasant or negative emotions. It's about making room for all of them, because each one serves a unique and important purpose. And this kind of reminds me of something really profound that Jesus said. In one of his most famous and beautifully poetic teachings, he says, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted." I find this to be a really striking statement. It seems to speak to the power and benefit of making room for our more difficult and unpleasant emotions, and seems to promise that in doing so, we'll also be making room for comfort. And maybe what we're really making room for is connection to a comforter. Okay, so what does this look like, this making room for our emotions? Well, I think there are many different approaches we can take, and so I'll outline a couple. An easy place to start is to notice any high-intensity emotions from your day. One way people often do this in the examen is to survey their day and look for the high point and the low point, the two opposite extremes. Finding this full range from top to bottom is part of how we can make room for all our emotions and the story that they have to tell us. So I want to tell you about my favorite book on the examen, but quick confession, I have read exactly 1.5 books on the examen. I'm still working on the second one, but the first is this marvelous little book called Sleeping with Bread, Holding What Gives You Life. So sadly, this book sat on my shelf, unread, collecting dust for years because I misjudged it as a kid's book. And you can see it's got these illustrations and things. But eventually I picked it up, and it's fantastic. It's both deep and totally accessible. It's practical, spiritual, and fun, which have been three important values for our community throughout the years. Anyway, this book is pretty much all focused on this particular part of the examen, where we're identifying the high and the low. And so the authors offer several pairs of questions that help us to identify those extreme points. I think their favorite pair is, for what moment today are you most grateful? For what moment today are you least grateful? Or you could phrase it in terms of love. When was I most able to give and receive love today? When was I least able to give and receive love today? Or in terms of feeling alive, when did I feel most alive today? When did I feel least alive? You get the idea. And here we can start to see some of the flexibility and versatility of the examen. In my family at the dinner table, every night we talk about our least and most favorite moments of the day. I've also used the examen as a dual self-reflection and icebreaker exercise with students that I work with at MIT, in both secular and spiritual settings, which is another way that the examen is so versatile. For those who are not interested in prayer, it's still a really beneficial exercise in introspection. So back to this idea of God being present in and maybe even speaking to us through all our experiences. If that's true, maybe one of the ways that he's speaking is through the inner world of our feelings. But, as we all know, when it comes to our emotions, things can get pretty crazy in there. It can feel like listening to our moment-to-moment emotions would be like putting a petulant toddler behind the wheel of a tractor trailer. How are we supposed to find God's voice in that? Well, this is where Ignatius was truly gifted, and his insights are very helpful. What we're looking for in this introspective exploration is something he called consolation and desolation. So consolation and desolation are inner spiritual stirrings that we experience. So first, consolation confirms movement towards greater connection with ourselves, with others, with God, with the universe. On the other hand, desolation alerts us to disconnection and isolation. Consolation and desolation help us to know whether we're moving toward or away from God, so to speak. And that may sound familiar to those of us who have been hanging out in this community for a long time. This is very much in line with what we call the centered set approach to faith in God, where we imagine God or Jesus as the center that we're trying to direct ourselves to and move towards. So learning to tune into these inner stirrings of consolation and desolation is a pretty big deal. I think all of us already experience both consolation and desolation in any given day. They're already happening, but they may sometimes be more subtle. So it can be very helpful to have a way to make room for them in our awareness, which is where the examen comes in. Identifying the moments for which I feel most and least grateful has been an excellent way to sensitize me to these subtle spiritual stirrings. A quick example. One pattern that I started to pick up on had me a little confused. I noticed that there was often some event or interaction in my day which was clearly a source of consolation, from finding my work fun and meaningful. But that same instance was also a source of desolation. So it was easy for me to wonder if I was somehow doing this examen wrong. But I eventually realized that the desolation wasn't coming from the interaction itself, but it was coming from me feeling self-conscious in that moment. And drawing this distinction has actually helped me to more fully experience and enjoy the consolation from that instance. And even though I can't snap my fingers and stop being self-conscious, I've at least identified the feeling so I can start to unpack where it's coming from. And a discovery like that is a perfect candidate for steps 4 and 5 of the examen. I can ask for God's help with being self-conscious, and I can look forward to tomorrow as a new opportunity. Well, now I'm going to circle back to this idea of emotional hygiene. which you'll recall just boils down to a habit of making room for all our emotions. Problem is, I think we all naturally encounter barriers to good emotional hygiene. So I'm going to mention a few and how the examine can be helpful. So the first barrier is, my life is too busy for me to feel. Too busy. We all have 1,000 things to do in a given day. Life is hectic, fast-paced, stressful. And it often seems that there is just not space to slow down and get in touch with our feelings. Well, the examen, as you might guess, is super helpful here because it takes only a few minutes at the end of the day, and it gives me a chance to make room for those emotions that got crowded out by the busyness of the day. The second barrier, I habitually distract myself from feeling. Now, I have perfected several methods of distracting myself from my emotions, and the first I would actually like to demonstrate for you. And you can go ahead and time me on this, because I do it like 1,000 times a day, so I'm getting pretty fast. Oh, not that time. But there it is. My cell phone, the internet at my fingertips. So I've got my email, I've got my social media feeds, I've got news sites, text messages. Whatever distraction is best suited to that particular moment, I've got it right here. And it's pretty much with me at all times. A couple of my other favorite distractions tend to be things like sugar delivery devices. Or, you know, watching a TV episode or two, or 12. And I realize that I have to be careful, because what starts out as distracting myself quickly morphs into numbing myself. And this does not serve me. As Brené Brown points out in her super famous TED Talk about vulnerability, we can't selectively numb our feelings. So in trying to numb one feeling, we actually end up numbing them all. Well, here's another case of the examen to the rescue. Since I do have these habits of distracting myself, and I'm not planning on getting rid of my cell phone, the discipline of doing the examen each day directly combats this distraction. I'm intentionally taking the time and making room for my feelings, even if it's slightly delayed by a few hours. And since feelings can't be selectively numbed, this is where the emotional range of the examen, getting in touch with both the high and the low, is very powerful. The third barrier, I don't know how to feel. This barrier might not be relevant to everyone, but it's very relevant to me. I can be what you might call emotionally illiterate. I often just don't know how to get in touch with my feelings. Or when I try, it feels like my emotions are a buzzing jumble of chaos and confusion. I sometimes think of them sort of like those annoying little pop-ups that come up on your computer screen. But they're in some foreign language that I don't know how to read. They're just showing up out of nowhere, demanding my attention, and blocking my view of what I'm trying to focus on. And often, it feels like my whole screen is just overrun with dozens and dozens of these pop-ups. And it's overwhelming. Well, here the examen helps me in two ways. First, since I'm trying to do it every day, I can stem the tide of these pop-ups building up too much. And second, I don't always know how to feel. But I think that's a pretty important thing to learn in life. And so the examen is my daily opportunity to practice and fumble my way through and learn. And for those of us who are approaching the examen as a prayer exercise as well as a self-reflection tool, we have the potential added benefit of getting to ask for God's help and guidance in the process. And I think what Ignatius and his cronies discovered is that God is pretty eager to give that kind of help. And in just a minute, we'll talk a little bit more about emotional literacy. But number four, the fourth barrier, is my emotions can feel unpleasant and unhelpful. So back to the idea of that unruly toddler driving the big truck. It can often feel like my emotions are at the least petty or at the worst, destructive. So as a kid, I used to love watching old episodes of the original Star Trek. But I couldn't really relate to the impassioned, overdramatic ways of the debonair Captain Kirk. However, Mr. Spock, now there's my kind of guy. Tall and skinny, a science rock star, but also calm, emotionless, and always unceasingly logical. So in one episode, Spock says, "May I say that I have not thoroughly enjoyed serving with humans? I find their illogic and foolish emotions a constant irritant." So, sadly, Spock has not been such a good mentor in this particular area. But fortunately, I've grown out of thinking that emotions are an irritant, a hindrance. Now, on the one hand, if I were just to act on all my emotions unreflectively, that probably wouldn't go so well. But, as I mentioned earlier, I think all of my emotions serve an important purpose. And in this sense, all my emotions are my allies. And as I start to learn to read and interpret what those little pop-ups are telling me, I realize that they give me valuable information. The examen is my opportunity to gather and assimilate that information. And if you remember back in step one, where I talked about inviting the totally unconditionally loving and non-judgmental presence of God, well, now we can start to see why that's so important. Because we want to be able to face our emotions non-judgmentally and with love for ourselves. But we're so close to our emotions that this is often very difficult to pull off. So God's presence can help us, can help immerse us in this loving and non-judging atmosphere that creates a safe container for our emotions, where I can read the messages without feeling threatened or scrutinized. So if you give this a try, I hope that you'll find, as I have, that the examen helpfully addresses many of these and other barriers to good emotional hygiene. And as we saw, something that's really helpful in this process is what's called emotional literacy. Now that's a big and dense topic, and we can't fully dive into that today. But throwing caution to the wind, I would like to hazard a quick whirlwind tour of emotional literacy. It effectively just boils down to answering the question, what am I feeling right now, in this moment? So one school of emotional literacy that I found very helpful says that there are five basic feelings which make up our emotional states, and they're pretty easy to remember. Glad, sad, mad, afraid, and ashamed. Very similar to what we saw in Inside Out. The idea is that at any given time, we're actually feeling all of these to some degree. It's just a question of what the mix is, of which ones are most prominent. So there's a simple exercise where I can take a quick inventory of my emotions using these basic five to see which feeling is on top. And when I find that feeling, I give some space to it. I see where it's coming from and what it's telling me. And then I can move on to the next one and the next one. So let me try and give you a current example from my life. I've recently noticed that there are a few unhealthy patterns in my relationship with my 4-year-old daughter. Now, overall, I think we have a wonderful relationship. But there are moments where we butt heads, and we have this dynamic of each stubbornly digging in our heels and refusing to let go of our agenda. And I found myself becoming really angry really quickly in these scenarios. Each successive time it happens, it seems like it happens faster, and the pattern becomes more entrenched. So I'd like to walk you through my inner monologue of how I might use the examen and one of these emotional inventories to unpack what some of my emotions are telling me. So let's say earlier today, there was one of these incidents where I got triggered into that very angry state in an interaction with my daughter. And now I'm sitting down to do the examen. And I won't have time to go through all five emotions, but I'll do several layers. Okay, so the emotional pop-up that's on top, dominating my entire screen, is obviously anger. What's my anger about? Well, I'm angry about not feeling like I'm in control of this situation. I'm angry that I don't feel respected by my daughter in this moment. I'm angry that she can't see that I've got her best interests in mind. And frankly, I'm angry about not getting my way in the conflict. In general, the helpful message that my anger gives me is that there's something I want. What is it I want in this case? Well, I want my daughter to listen to me. I want her to respect me. I want her to know how much I love her. I want a good relationship with her. And I want to feel like a good father. So this is valuable information. And I find that once that emotion has been able to give me that message, and I take in the message, it can be clicked away, or at least sent to the background. So then I look to see what emotion is beneath that anger. And in this case, I discover it's sadness. I feel sadness over the hurt that I'm causing my daughter, that I'm probably causing her to feel rejected. I feel sadness about not knowing how to handle the situation in a better, less painful way. I feel sadness over the fact that strife in relationships is a part of life. The message of sadness is that I've lost something and I need to let it go. So what have I lost here? Well, in this moment at least, I've lost that loving, healthy relationship that I desire to have with her. And I think I've also lost this illusion that I cling to that I can somehow always make things work out and avoid painful situations. Letting go of that illusion is actually very helpful to me. So in this process, I come to realize that I have become emotionally constipated. Now, I'm mixing my emotional metaphors here, but maybe you catch my drift. Subconsciously, I do not want to get in touch with that sadness. And so I keep it bottled up under a protective layer of anger. But if I can allow myself to engage with that sadness, I am empowered to let go and move on. And my experience is that while the sadness is very unpleasant, it leads to me feeling free and joyful. And it's moments like that that make me feel like Jesus was really onto something with his "blessed are those who mourn" thing. Because mourning, making room for that sadness, has helped me to get in touch with my joy in this situation. I love my daughter so much. The message joy is sending me is that I have something good and I want more of it. I do have connection with her and I want more. Without this opportunity to sort these things out, I think I would just say, I would just stay stuck in the place of being angry. Well, to wrap up, I'd like to mention what I think and hope might be the most important gift of doing the examen daily over a long period of time, like years and years. And I am not at this point yet. I'm still relatively new, but I feel like I'm maybe starting to see glimpses of